This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The economy may be recovering from the crash of 2008, but American families are not. Household income is down more than 7% since the recession began, and most of that decline, nearly 5%, has come since the so-called recovery began. Facts like these can indicate the way working folks are doing financially these days, but they can't tell the whole story, especially when it comes to the growing number of families that now live in poverty. For that, you'd have to talk to the people who live in those conditions. A group of scholars, journalists, and activists have been touring the state this year to gather testimony on what it really means to be poor. They call the tour Truth and Hope, Putting a Face on Poverty in North Carolina. The Reverend William Barber is president of the North Carolina NAACP. He's one of the organizers of the tour, and he joins us now. Reverend Dr. Barber, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Always, Frank, and thank you for what you do.
How did it go? Tell us about the trip.
Well, one of the things we learned on this with the UNC Poverty Center, the Center for Civic Engagement, AARP, and the Justice Center, we have to speak truthfully and consistently about the systemic poverty. There were people in crisis long before we started talking about a crisis in 2007. And what we have seen is we have engaged in a form of attention violence against the poor for many, many years. And I want to and what we saw from Roper to the mountains is the faces of blacks and whites and women and children and Latinos and men in extreme poverty situation that didn't just start since 2007. And I'll talk to you a little bit about what that means and what the statistics are, but what we actually saw, which is actually worse than the statistics.
You know, when we talk about poverty, though, we have to know exactly what it is we're talking about. To be poor in 1920, to be poor in 1930 means something mm-hmm. different than it does in 2012. How much support is there? How many other programs, or how much other support is there for people who aren't earning much money these days?
Well, we are in a deep moral crisis, and one of the things that hinders us from addressing the issue of structural and systemic poverty is, first of all, this notion of rugged individualism, that everybody just pulled themselves up by their own bootstrap, a dismissal of all of the kinds of things that help people get where they are, which is ahistorical. The second thing that keeps us from addressing the issue of poverty is this racialized narrative. You know, many of the programs, even from Franklin Roosevelt up, were kind of popular among certain communities, among white communities. But around the 1960s, entitlement became a negative word, right around the time that blacks and brown people began to benefit from so-called entitlement. So there's this racialized narrative of who's deserving and who's not. You heard it in Santorum and Gingrich, you know, during the recent Republican primary. But then the third thing is this notion that banks, for instance, are too big to fail, but people and communities can fail, and that people are poor because they want to be poor or they're lazy poor. When we went to Hartford and saw a 70-year-old woman that had to go back to work just to get medicine for her husband, that's not the lazy poor. Women who work as nurses assistants in Wilmington but have to go back and live in homeless shelters because they don't make enough money. Or in Mount Pilot, where a plant pulled out, went overseas in 2003 and left that community devastated. That's not the working poor. These are people who have been made poor because of deregulation, because of Wall Street Ponzi schemes, because we've skewed all of our policies toward the wealthy and the super wealthy, and moved away from this moral consideration of the common good.
And as you said, a lot of people had been struggling long before 2007. Yeah. Cash Michaels is the editor of the Carolinian. I know he traveled with you to document the tour. And we've got a clip from a short film that he made, Truth and Poverty Tour 2012. Now, this is a woman speaking. She's Elizabeth Murray, mm-hmm. and she's from New Hanover County.
It's all I've ever known all my life is being poor. And my father retired after 32 years at Chrysler Air Tent. And when Chrysler had their crisis, they took 20% of my father's pension. And a year later, they gave their executives a bonus, but my father's never gotten back his pension. And I don't know no other way of life. This is all I've ever known. I was, remember when we were little, my parents filed bankruptcy when I was 8 years old. And I know what it's like to go to bed hungry as a child and wake up hungry and go to bed hungry. And after a while, your stomach stops hurting, but when you take that bite of food, it hurts.
That's Elizabeth Murray of New Hanover County.
That was one of the hardest stories. And I mean, when you, and that story, I can give you story after story. My own home community in Washington County, where we saw people and the poverty level as high as 40%. We have 10 counties in North Carolina where poverty has been over 20% for 30 years. And again, this attention balance. We talk about the middle class. We talk about the wealthy in our politics, in our private sectors. But we say nothing hardly about systemic poverty. And until we demand attention to it, till we draw attention to it, till we tell the truth, we won't even have the hope of address. Notice in her statement, her family became poor because of a scheme where the corporation was allowed to take her family's well-earned pension. Where we are right now, Frank, in this issue, one out of three Latinos are living in poverty, one out of three American Indians, one out of four African Americans, one out of eight white North Carolinians, 24.9% of North Carolina's children, 40% of North Carolina's African American children, 23% of persons with disabilities are living in poverty, over 18% of North Carolinians living in poverty. This is not because people are on some vacation or because they're lazy. These are systemic issues where we're not using the best of our ability in terms of infrastructure and economic development, providing education and health care. We need what Dr. King said 40 years ago, a Marshall-type plan for the poor. And when you ask me the question, what support is there for it, part of this tool, and we're going to also call for the most massive poor people for poor people and poor advocates march on Raleigh in February at our normal historic 1000 on Jones Street coalition gathering, irregardless of who wins the election, because we deny and ignore this problem to the very damage of the soul of our state and our nation. We cannot, as one politician said, keep putting it into quiet back rooms. It needs to be at the front and center of our agenda. In this country.
So what's happening? If you go into a community where 40% of the people are living in poverty, how are people getting along? What does that community look like? How do people get by?
Well, in one community, for instance, one of our most pristine communities, like East Spencer, right outside of our banking capital, they don't even have food stores, food stores. It's a food desert. Or in Hickory, they move into the woods. But guess what? When we went into the woods, we found out every so often the cops come, cut the tents, run them out. But in the woods, Frank, one of the days when I lost it uncontrollably, I was with our team. We went down the woods, and as we walked, you could see evidence that children were living in the woods. When we got there, there were black and white people, veterans living in the woods. But interestingly enough, we found real humanity. They told us to stop so they could clean up the dirt to allow us in the camp. And I thought about how insane and immoral that is. We put our hands on the Bible and swear ourselves into public office, not knowing that there are more than 300 verses in that Bible that say we will be judged and dealt with on how we treat the poor. Of all of the great immoral things of the scriptures, how you treat the least of these is the number one issue. Yet we are treating them inhumane, and yet somehow people are maintaining their humanity in the most inhumane situation. The fact it is shameful. It should anger us. It should bother us. And we can do better than that. We are the nation that said we could put somebody on the moon. We are the state that said, show us where a hill is and we can fly. People once said we couldn't deal with racism and segregation. Dr. King, 49 years ago this week, I was born today, August 30th, 2 days after the March on Washington. Dr. King said, in spite of where we were, there was a dream. So what we've said, Frank, if we don't tell the truth, we don't even have a chance, a hope of addressing this reality. But if we don't address it, we make null and void and hypocritical everything we claim to be as a state and as a nation.
You call it attention violence. How is it possible that so many people living in these conditions, that voice hasn't been heard, and that for some reason there hasn't been more of an outcry, more outrage over those conditions?
Well, I think many times, you know, those who are in poverty don't have the kind of political organizing, which is one of the reasons this tour, we're also also envisioning new ways of political organizing, new ways of bringing people in the movement. You know, in our movement, HK on J, we started in 2006, pulling people together. Now we have 140 organizations around 14-point agenda, and poverty is one of the centerpieces of that. But also, as I said, what disables us is we talk nasty to the poor now. You know, listen to this conversation where we act as though supply side economics works when we know it doesn't. We say banks are too big to fail, Wall Street's too big to fail, but we dismiss communities. We suggest that people are poor and lazy. We made entitlements a negative word, while at the same time we're giving tax breaks to the wealthy and corporate welfare, as much as we can. So there has been this loud echo to actually volume attempts to diminish the whole issue of poverty as a moral issue. One time we had a war on poverty, but it was the shortest war we fought. And during that period, if you look at statistics, we actually began to make a real dent in the issue of poverty. But somewhere we've got to find a way to return, or maybe for the first time come to, a moral center that understands how immoral it is for you to have a disdain for the least of these, how wrong it is in the wealthiest nation in the world to have this kind of systemic poverty, and then to do a double damage of not only having it, but then blaming the poor. And listen, where is our heart when 1.6 million North Carolinians live in poverty, the same number in 1969, 6 years after my birth, and 600,000 children, not black children or white children, but God's children. And we act as though that's okay. This nation can't sustain itself when you accept 10 or 12% of your population being in poverty full time as okay. It is not okay.
But is it just a matter of exhortation and even organization? Because as you said, the rhetoric is such that we're blaming the poor mm-hmm. for their condition. Mm-hmm. We glorify the wealthy and I think aspire to their position and therefore don't want to change the rules mm-hmm. in case I make myself into that class. Mm-hmm. So is it just a question of exhortation? Is it really just bringing this to light? To a certain extent, these statistics are out there. They do mm-hmm. get reported mm-hmm. and we do hear from people. And in a sense, it only gets worse in terms of the public perception. So what has to change? What has to change?
Right. But what we do is we hear the statistics and without seeing the faces. And then what we also do is, I say, if you think about it, our dialogue is middle class and wealthy. We don't talk about now in this country, rhetoric and exhortation is critical to shape the values, to shape the direction. The reality is, I believe, Frank, is that no, it's not just exhortation, but exhortation with the faces and demand is critical if we're going to move. We are in a moral crisis. And the reality is in America, we didn't get hospitals until there was a moral outcry. There was something wrong with people just being sick. We didn't get a change in our civil rights until there was a moral outcry. There was something deeply wrong, that we were being hypocritical in what we said in our Constitution and what we claimed in our religious faith. So part of what truth and hope means, only the truth can set us free to think about a better way. Only the truth can say, if our budgets are fair, if the wealthy pay their fair share, we can pay people a living wage. We can provide education for all our children. We can have infrastructure. We can have economic development. But we don't even have a shot at getting to what we can do until we tell the truth about where we are and have a deep moral conviction about how wrong it is.
We heard from Elizabeth Murray, and obviously others like her showed up. How did they hear about you? How many people came? And what did they tell you they thought should be done?
Much of what we're saying here, 27 cities and counties and communities, over 2,000 miles. In fact, she wasn't going to speak that morning, and there was a sister that saw her, and she came in. And the part you didn't hear was when she was told how she was not able to get health care because she did not have insurance, and how when she would go into certain clinics, they told her she was crazy, was the word she used, when she actually needed a pill and needed something that would deal with her hormonal system. But everywhere we went, what is incredible is people in extreme poverty still have a deep hope in this country and the possibility for us to get around. None of them wanted a handout, but they do want a fair system. They did say there's a deep problem with when we seem to to you know, think about this argument we're having right now politically, whether or not to give the wealthy more tax breaks and whether or not to provide health care for all our citizens. To even juxtapose those two points to a moral crisis. People who are in office, who get the health care they get in Capitol Hill only because they got elected by the people, don't want the people to have the same kind of health care they have. That you are in a seriously flawed moral position when we're making those kind of juxtaposition. So people are understanding that this is not easy work. It's going to be hard. It's going to take time, and we got to push it. But we have to have a groundswell of movement, advocates for the poor, poor people working together. That's why we're going all over the state showing this documentary. We're now into organizing. We're showing people what we've seen. We're going to organize. We're going to put it before every candidate for governor, every member of the legislature, before our private investment leaders. Because here's the other side. You know, Frank, I'm from the country. I've told you I'm from Eastern North Carolina. In Eastern North Carolina, we often can't buy a new house. We have to move what we have. I've never seen people move a house by taking the roof off and moving it higher. If you tear the roof off and move it higher, the house will implode. So if we only pay attention to the wealthy, the house of America, the house of North Carolina will implode. But if you lift from the bottom, the foundation, and lift that house, you move the whole house, and everybody's better. So the wealthy and even the middle class have a stake in this. We cannot continue to have a nation and state where we have this many people languishing in poverty, and we can do better because it will hurt the whole state and the whole nation.
Tactically and strategically, what does that program or body of programs look like? Because I can imagine you're talking about improving education, improving health care, those kinds of social policies. But also, a lot of companies left not because of foreign competition, but because hedge fund operators systematically stripped them of their value, and that's why people got out of work. That was another side of it. It seems to me that adds complexity. If you sort of look at that part of what is structural poverty and include that in a strategy or program that you would present to a lawmaker. So what does yours look like?
Well, you're exactly right. It is complex. And that's why we need the best minds, the best politician, the best moral leaders. We need poor people at the table to look at the full complexity of the problem. I agree with you. The reality is we need for lack of a better word, a Marshall type plan for North Carolina. We rebuild other countries when they're ravaged from war. We need to rebuild our own countries when they're ravaged in poverty. We need to talk about how do we use the green economy and science and technology and long-term strategic and educational investment. How do we create the opportunity structures in those counties that are in persistent poverty for the last 30 years? How do we create opportunity structures that draw in good-paying jobs? How do we have a real conversation about living wages and making sure the minimum wages index with it, inflation, making sure we protect the earned income tax credit, make sure that we have health care. And we have to say, not first, how much does it cost if we do it? How much does it cost if we don't do it? That's the real question.
Is it costing us not to do it?
Certainly, because at the end of the day, first of all, it cost us the deepest thing, and that is the integrity of our soul. It cost us not being true to what we say. We say in our founding documents, our Constitution, that all political power comes from the people for the good of the whole, not for the good of the wealthy or the good of the middle class or the good of the few. But more importantly, if you educate everybody, then they will be able to get jobs. If you provide living wages, guess where you're going to spend it? In the economy. Businesses will grow. Products will move. So there is a practical consideration to this matter that if you have a pyramid and the foundation is filled with cracks and holes, then it actually hurts the rest of it. Otto Swammer says we have a blind spot of consciousness when it comes to our economic theory. And we have to have an economic theory that understands that we are all connected together.
Reverend Barber, thank you so much. As always, good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Reverend William J. Barber III, president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP. You can see Cash Michael's documentary, Truth and Poverty Tour 2012, on YouTube. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a bird that has gone extinct. Stay with us on The State of Things.